Good evening, everyone. This is Coach Matt, and you are listening to Better Health and Body Radio, your source for the latest and greatest information and understanding in the world of health, nutrition, and performance, where we give you a seat at the table next to the best and the brightest minds to arm you with the information you need to optimize yourself. Join us for another exciting, thought-provoking episode of BHB Radio, starting now. Good evening, everyone. This is Coach Matt here with another episode of BHB Radio. We have one of my all-time favorite guests on tonight. That is Sarah Aguilar. Sarah is personally responsible for bringing the benefits of exogenous ketones on health optimization as a metabolic therapy, and of course for athletic performance over to the UK and introducing them to people there. We're going to get into a ton of stuff, actually how a strict ketogenic diet might not be the best thing for you guys and why having more carbohydrates should probably be something just about all of you do. Advice for women on how to make sure that your hormones don't get disrupted if you're following some type of low-carb, high-fat diet. In addition to that, how to turn your diet into a lifestyle you can sustain in the long run. We're going to get into a bit on preventative health and immunity, which of course is on everyone's mind during the pandemic. In addition to that, we're also going to cover how many athletes and everyday individuals can succeed by being more flexible with these keto type approaches. We'll get into what we can learn from keto too, right? Like, what are the principles we can take from that we can apply to everything else? And think about this in a little bit of a bigger perspective, bigger picture sense. So I'm excited, guys. This is probably the best or second best episode ever, right up there with the Tim Noakes episode. So I can't wait to introduce you guys to Sarah. Hey, Sarah, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Matt. Thank you so much for having me. How are you doing?
Solid. Just, you know, over here in California, enjoying myself, you know, spreading the good word, the good health word.
Yeah, great. You've got the sunshine now.
I have, yeah. A little extra vitamin D actually always helps, especially during the winter. So for people listening at home who might not know who you are, do you mind explaining, you know, who you are, what you do, and also a little bit about some of the work that you're up to these days with keto supplements?
Yeah, of course. Well, I run Keto Supplements, a website in Europe that sells ketogenic supplements and foods, and love doing that. Write a lot of research as well and blog posts on the diet and how to get into it. But the reason that I set it up originally was actually because my husband was diagnosed with late onset adult epilepsy about 10 years ago now. And 5 years ago, he started delving into the keto diet, and I started to do it with him too, and found that, like, I could, you know, I went from what was paleo to being keto, and I had so much energy and focus as well, and started applying myself, kind of learning a little bit more about business and WordPress and things like that in my free time before and after work. And then I saw a Dom D'Agostino video on deep sea divers using exogenous ketones to prevent seizures when they're on the water. And I thought that, you know, that's pretty breakthrough. If my husband gets seizures and the medication that he's on doesn't really work, and even though he's on keto, what about when he doesn't have enough energy, if he's accidentally cheated on his diet or deliberately cheated on the diet, or if he's tired or had alcohol, and tiredness is one of the main triggers for a seizure. So I saw that, and I was like, if I got those for him, he basically has a hack to prevent the seizure if he's tired, had alcohol or sugar, which is like completely life changing, because then you don't have to live under such strict rules all the time. So I wanted to get those, but they weren't available in Europe at the time. So this was like four and a half years ago, something like that. And I was like, I need to get them for him as a Christmas present, and I could only find them in the States. And then a couple of months later, I decided to set up a ketogenic website in, you know, because I just figured we can't be the only people who are looking for exogenous ketones. And I just came up with the name with him, worked on, since I'd already been learning a little bit of WordPress, worked on the website, just borrowed, like, buried myself in it for a month. And like none of my friends saw me. I was so busy like building the website, importing the products. And I literally just figured that if nothing sold, we would just use them ourselves over the next few years. And that was my backup plan.
Nice.
And then I just literally buried myself in building the business for a month. And after a month, launched my first Google ads, spent like 99p, which is just over a dollar on Google ads, and woke up in the morning and we had orders. And I couldn't believe it, that it actually worked. You know, when you work towards something and you just don't really believe that it will actually work. And then from then on, it just grew, and I left my other job and just dove into it, all things keto, attending all the conferences, and expanding the range of supplements and foods that we sell on the site. But we're really super strict about not having artificial sweeteners, or anything that can mess up your gut microbiome or trigger other things that are bad for you. So it's quite a clean keto site. So yeah, that's how I set it up. And then that's, you know, I've just grown it from there, and I absolutely love it, and I'm really happy it worked out.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great to hear, because now it's like you get to pay your guys' experience forward and help a lot of other people too, sounds like.
Yeah, and I always figure that if you have a problem, you probably aren't the only person with that issue. So if you solve it, you're solving it for a bunch of other people who have the same experience. So it was, you know, there's a gap. It was also lucky timing. You know, I was learning about something that was going to get bigger. I didn't know that. And there was a huge gap in the market. And we were so niche. It was easy to stand out and then, you know, gain traction and get customers. Otherwise, now it would be much more difficult, because keto is not saturated by any stretch, but there's a lot more competition out there than there were 4 years ago.
Certainly, certainly. I like that you said too about accidentally cheating on your diet. I'm going to use that excuse in the future. I didn't purposely cheat on my diet. It just accidentally happened. It sounds like a
Yeah, well,
it
you
sounds
can
like
do if there's a hidden ingredient in something, or you have something and you don't know it has a sugar content.
sure.
Because that can happen. Like I used to have, for example, apple cider vinegar is really low in sugar, balsamic vinegar is really high in sugar. So you can have a salad with a fleek, what you think is keto meal, and yet you've had quite a bit of sugar from the vinegar, but you didn't realize that until you checked your ketones, or you just didn't know. And there's so many hidden ingredients that can spike your blood sugar levels that you can accidentally cheat. That wasn't just me being lazy.
I realize that. It's funny because it sounds like someone's like a just a vacuum, and just like foods in your biome and accidentally get sucked in. You know what I mean? Like just whatever's in the area there. Well, that's awesome. And you also, I mean, I would, you know, you're a legitimate researcher in the space too. You know, I think of you as something of a almost like a nutritional health and nutritional anthropologist, in the sense that you're interviewing and learning from the best in the space. You know, you're reading the research. So in a lot of ways, I think a lot of people look at you as something of a curator of information, right? And it's like you're just like all of us. You're going, and that's kind of what I do with this podcast in some ways, is it's like you're going through the space and learning more for yourself, and you're solving other people's problems who have the same question along the way. So I think it's an even bigger picture than just the exogenous ketones too.
Yeah, thank you. That's actually my favorite part, is doing the research and the writing and the learning and trying to convey the information in a really easy to understand way. And luckily, because I've got the anthropological background and I've done some supplement courses and nutritional courses as well, I can sort of combine the academic with the more easy to understand and merge them. And yeah, I love anything to do with ancestral health. And ancestral living is just so crucial to the way that we can find, really go back to the roots of health, because so much of what makes us unhealthy today is more of the newer inventions and the fake foods and the fake living, which becomes so problematic, whether it's physical or nutritional or even technological, if we're spending too much time isolated or on technology. It's we just need to go back to the base. The health is so basic and so simple. You just go back to the basics, like sunlight, socializing, grounding, eating real food.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be healthy. There's not much, and you know, there's not much to it.
Right.
Just a lot of distractions from the modern world.
I try to tell people that, I think it's very well put. You know, I try to tell people the same thing, and that's that you if you can at least do a minimum effective dose in each area, nutritionally, exercise-wise, light exposure-wise, you know, mindfulness-wise, sleep-wise, and then, you know, your environment, right? Some controlling elements of pollution or electromagnetic frequencies, things like that. If you can kind of do a just some baseline interventions there in each area. If you think of kind of alchemy, like it's like a circle mm-hmm. for where they initially would transmute base metals into gold or bad things into good things is a bigger picture way to think about it. If you do those things, like you said, you're going to be healthy or at the very least healthier, right? And I think that that's something that's kind of gotten lost a little bit in the unfortunate situation that we're in this year with the pandemic and seeing many people suffering. It's like the government having a lack of in a lower governments, you know, most of them have not really had very much preventative health measures in place. And I think we're seeing that kind of get exposed this year. So I've been trying to tell people, like, you know, your immune system and focusing on your health and performance and fitness are not mutually exclusive things. The more you focus on your own personal health, nutrition, fitness, athletic performance goals, whatever they may be, the more you're going to make yourself a more resilient organism over time to viruses as well. And really states of disease of all kinds.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with that. It's all health is about going back to basics and eliminating things that have a negative impact on your body. But when you look at what the governments have been doing around the world with regards to the pandemic, it's so much, it really does, like you said, highlight that healthcare is actually more about managing sickness than preventing illness in the first place. It's not about maintaining health. It's about avoiding, you know, managing sickness. And we need to move more to a preventative space, whereas saying, well, what can you do to improve your immunity and your resilience and your health? Because whether there's a virus or not a virus, the pandemics will come and go as the human population grows, and we need to become more resilient. So even if there's a vaccine, the disease will mutate, there'll be another disease coming along. We've just got to be strong and healthy, and you're absolutely right, work on all of those areas and mostly eliminate. It's most of it is just elimination, taking out all the things that are bad, that are detracting from your health. And it's usually bad diet, overexposure to EMF, not enough sunlight, too much artificial light, which is really damaging for the mitochondria.
Mm-hmm.
And drinking clean water, but water that's not been removed of all the salts and electrolytes, because that depletes you even further. So even if you think, I'm drinking loads of water, if it's chlorinated, it's actually pulling everything that you need out of you.
Right.
So you've got to have extra, we basically have to undo everything that's been told to us for the last 20, 30 years. So it's like, you need salt and you need fat, and basically take all the artificial things out, all the vegetable oils that are so damaging for health and particularly causing chronic diseases, and start afresh, go back to nature. Because we are animals, and I think humans, we can be very kind of think too highly of ourselves, too arrogant in a way, and forget that we are actually animals first and foremost, and then everything else comes after that. And if you treated a dog the way we treat ourselves, it would be very unhappy and very fat and very sick, which is what most of the world looks like, sadly.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's I would like, because I'm a believer in the miracles of modern medicine too. You know, if you, God forbid, get injured, if you, you're having a baby, you need, stem cells, whatever the case may be, there's probably no place in the world you'd rather be than, a lot of these first world countries that are dominated in that, by that Western medical care. It would be great to have a bridge built there, which is actually what Tim Noakes, who I interviewed, is trying to do. Is he's actually teaching more of preventative health measures, in his case, low carb, high fat, But he's teaching, you know, preventative nutrition to doctors to basically balance out what you would call chronic care or more allopathic medicine, or excuse me, acute care, which is what you call more like allopathic medicine, with wellness care or chronic care, like how you take care of yourself the rest of the time, and balancing those things out. And I'm not sure the inner workings financially of all countries, but in the US at least, there's a great book you can read called Rockefeller Medicine Men. And it talks all about how some of the original kind of, you know, rich founding 1% families of the United States sort of looked at healthcare. And back then you had the option of choosing between the two, like when you needed them. And what they did was they actually put a bunch of money behind allopathic care. And instead of using it for the brilliance that it is, they turned that into kind of how you always take care of people. And it was basically a subscription-based business model. And then, which was more profitable, right? And then they basically, advertising was promoted by them, which called everyone who went against that grain a quack, functionally. And that's where that term comes from. So
I didn't know that. Interesting, yeah. I'll have to read that.
Yeah, it's called Rockefeller Medicine Men, Medicine and Capitalism. And again, it's not a referendum of being anti-allopathic at all. You know, I think allopathic medicine is a miracle. It's just, we need a, like anything, you need a balance between the two, and you need to know when to use one and when to use the other.
Absolutely. We need both.
That's where like so much magic and healing and in some ways evolving the population forward could really happen, you know, as if those two branches talked more and more.
Yeah, it's one of the amazing things that has been really useful for my husband with his epilepsy, and has been, he's got a doctor who's like a functional doctor. Mm. So he's a proper trained doctor. But he's very holistic, and he uses bioresonance, and has been absolutely amazing, because it really is the merging of the two disciplines, and taking the best and all the knowledge from a broad spectrum of areas and fields where you can really solve problems. And his idea is that, well, the seizures are actually linked to alkalinity. And if you're too alkaline, that's what can cause seizures. And very few people are alkaline. Most of them are acidic. And the keto diet often works, not just because of the ketone energy to the brain, but also because a ketogenic diet is more acidic as well. Mm-hmm. So it changes the pH balance, because there's often this idea that we should always have a neutral or alkaline pH, when actually some people do better if they're a little bit more acidic, depending on whatever's going on in their body at the time.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I hadn't really considered that, you know, myself. It is rare where you find like an MD who's also very much based in integrative health, although I think it's becoming more common, which is awesome, in certain areas. Yeah. I know that with certain like chronic neurological conditions, and with a lot of chronic conditions in general, a lot of it, and people in the generative energy or the Dr. Ray Pete community would sort of agree with this too, is that, you know, damaged mitochondria, or the behind any, I guess I should back up a little bit so the people at home kind of know what I'm talking about here, behind any state of like bad fitness or bad athletic performance or disease, at some level is an energy deficit. And so the idea is we have a certain amount of energy from our mitochondria in our cells. That's like our currency. That's like the Bitcoin of the body, if you will. And when we have only so much of that to spend on things, and then we deplete that through our lifestyle and then try to run the car on empty, then what ends up happening is these energy deficits can manifest in a few ways. So if I have the genetics for a neurological condition, it might manifest like that. Like some of the people I work with on the training side have MS and things like that. Other people have, you know, hormonal deficits, so on and so forth, right? Other people have thyroid problems. So basically it all kind of comes down to that. And then it's sort of a combination of what are your genetic predispositions combined with what are the ways in which you abused your body. And so that's sort of the pathway usually to how that energy deficit is going to manifest. And so doing a lot of these different things like we've been talking about in each area, maybe combined with some targeted stuff, helps you get the mitochondria or the energy in your bank account going again in the body. And then it has a lot more energy to not only fight these things off, but for wellness care of the body, right? Kind of energy and abundance, if you will.
Yeah, and to be able to thrive.
Right.
Yeah, it's finding out what's depleting you, what things are going wrong in the body. And I remember reading one study on Alzheimer's, and that one of the reasons Alzheimer's occurs is because the brain cells can't utilize glucose for energy anymore. And that's why ketones work really well, whether it's exogenous or nutritional ketones, which is really fascinating and really also sad when you think of what do elderly people get in old people's homes is usually biscuits and sweet tea, which is just a load of sugar, when actually they should just give them a slab of butter for their brains to work better. But again, it's interesting how we can go through part of our lives being able to use glucose for energy, and then all of a sudden things start to break down, and then we need a different source of energy for some people, and how different things express. Because I think epigenetics is absolutely fascinating, mm-hmm. that we have those genes dormant, but depending on our environment and what we do, they may or may not ever express. And we have that, there's an element of control there, isn't there, of our own destiny. So it's, yeah, I might have all these cancerous genes, but they may never express. And it's, I don't know, I think it's really positive. It makes me feel really happy that we have, you know, to a degree, we can control some of our health, or at least aim for the most positive outcome.
Yeah, yeah, it really does put you in the driver's seat and empowers you, you know, which is very much, to me, that's one of the things that gives me hope, and I think should give a lot of people hope, and just in general. You know, I also think the healthier you are, generally the happier you are too, right? And those things tie into each other, right? Like a lot of people that I might talk to have various issues with mental health, whether it's an athlete or an individual. They might have anxiety, like some of the guys in the NBA, like DeMar DeRozan. He was the first one to really break that bridge, all the way to everyday people stressed about life or depressed. And sometimes people have these sort of classic esoteric and existential problems, but it could be a vitamin D deficiency. It could, you know, usually it's more than one thing. It's multifactorial, but you know, they don't sleep well. They're not exercising. They have basically burnt themselves out too long with, you know, too deep of a caloric deficit, not enough energy for so long that they degrade their thyroid hormone and stuff. So they have less life force and energy, if you will. So I think that the more we can educate people and support people in these ways, the more you kind of help people like level up and feel better and start to self-actualize.
Yeah, definitely. It is that, I guess with current medicine, it focuses mainly on the symptoms rather than the causes of the issue, but not the other issue is people having a support group and finding the information, and the educating is key, because there are a few people who really take their health into their own hands and do their own research. But often that's after 10 years or so of struggling while following what they've been told to do, or what the official protocols are for certain things. Like earlier today, I was speaking to Hannah Beathias. She's a keto speaker, and she's got type 1 diabetes and has been, you know, using a low carbon keto diet for the past 10 years to help her. But she had to go through so many challenges with her nutritionists and doctors, because they were against what she was doing, and she had to just figure it out. And that can be very dangerous when you're changing your diet and your insulin levels. And it's like, what she's doing is amazing, because she's educating other people and creating support groups through doing that. Otherwise, doing it on your own is scary, mm-hmm. and can be dangerous. Even if you've got all the best literature in front of you, you know, it's still hard to sieve through the good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's good to be able to find a nice balance between supporting people and then also empowering them and giving them their own self-agency, right? And that kind of creates someone who's going to tinker with their health in a good way for life and constantly refine things and, you know, get better and better. And it just becomes part of you, not, you know, not who you are, but it becomes a part of you.
Mm.
So one other thing too, speaking of like different energy systems, I think there's also, just to kind of play contrarian for a little bit, I've talked about this candidly with some folks, you know, behind the scenes at Real Ketones. I've talked, mm-hmm. you know, you'll hear people like even Rob Wolf, Mark Sisson talk about this now, Dr. Mike T. Nelson, various people in the Ray Pete community as well. where like doing a strict ketogenic diet for a lot of people, and you probably, I know you and I believe you had liked or commented something that I posted about this last night. That's kind of why it reminded me to bring it up. But there's almost this sort of notion that if you are following a strict ketogenic diet, that's kind of more of just like the end game. Whereas I think for a lot of people that might be more of a method and then the principle, and the principle is more having a flexible metabolism that can burn both fat and carbs for fuel. And that ketones themselves have a ton of benefit, but because the strict, like a strict as originally written ketogenic diet was originally designed for kind of sick kids in a medical application, do you think that it's better to allow people to have some type of flexibility moving forward if they are, let's say, an athlete or let's say various types of people on the spectrum?
100%. I don't think that you should be doing a keto diet strict long-term, anyone, unless you've got a neurological issue. Mm. And the reason being is, well, first of all, if you do that, you will become too sugar sensitive, too glucose sensitive. When you do have sugar, your body just can't handle it. Mm. But most importantly for hormone production. So I know with particularly with women, and I know that the research currently is very anecdotal, but when you're in your follicular phase, I think it is, you need to have more carbs. So it's a period right before your actual menstruation.
Right.
You need more carbs because otherwise it can impact your period. So you just, that's why women get a lot of cravings before their periods, because they're burning an extra something like 600 calories a day, mm-hmm. and they need carbs, and they need the carbs for the hormone production. So I would say the thing that suits, would suit most people would be a low carb approach, and to try and flex the ketogenic diet in and out every now and then, but eat healthy, whole, real food. So real plants, real animals, and to eliminate grains as much as possible. And obviously processed sugar, processed anything, because processed fat isn't good for you, never mind processed sugar.
Right. Yeah.
So
that's,
it's really,
real seed oils.
Yeah. Oh, that's worse than sugar by far. If you want to destroy your health, and totally ubiquitous in everything that we eat. But I would say the best approach is to eat. The first thing is to go real. So eat food that looks like food. So if it's an animal, it should look like an animal, not like a chicken nugget, for example. And eat leafy greens and vegetables and fruit, especially following kind of what's growing seasonally. I think it's really important to eat what's in season. And I think it's also important to look at your ancestral background. And that has a very big indication on the kinds of foods that you can eat, because some people do better eating more carbs, and okay. some people do far better on a higher fat, lower carb diet. And I think I think that the closer to the equator that you are, where fruits, the exotic fruits would have grown naturally, the more that you can cope with carbs of the fruit variety. And then if you're from the northern or southern hemisphere, I mean really far southern hemisphere, so if you're from a colder region, you're much better suited on animal fats and a very low carb diet. And that is because in those regions where it was very cold, that's all the food you could get hold of, and that's what your ancestors ate for thousands of years, and you've evolved to eat that sort of food. Even though farming has been in, you know, people have been farming grains for 5,000 years, 10,000 years, it takes a body something like 90,000 years to actually evolve physiologically. So unless you were eating it 90,000 years ago, we probably have a problem digesting it. And that's why people have such huge issues with gluten, because it's been so recently introduced into our diet, and right. the potency of what we eat, it's incredibly destructive. And grains and carbs, people can't handle them. And that's why we get large-scale obesity and chronic illnesses, because the food is so unnatural. Our bodies, you know, it's great food in terms of energy efficient if you need to, you know, run miles and miles and miles and miles. People aren't doing that. And it's also sugar causes inflammation, as do vegetable oils, and that will manifest through aches and pains in joints, you know, neurological issues, feeling tired and unwell, and all the chronic diseases that go along with that when it comes to like heart disease and type 2 diabetes as well, because our bodies can't cope with what we're being bombarded with. And these are all things that did not exist in our diet. So I think the key is look at what your ancestors ate. That's probably what you should be eating, because back then people died of diseases, and say if they cut themselves open and or were attacked by an animal, there were no slow killers as such in general, and certainly weren't diseases caused by the food that they were eating because of the variety of foods. And again, people ate the whole animal then, even though there's like a big carnivore movement at the moment. If you just eat protein, you're still going to miss out on all the vitamins and nutrients you'd get from eating the liver or the heart of something. So we need not just an eat real food approach, but eat the whole animal, and don't be squeamish about food. You know, it's almost like you've got to embrace the bloodiness of life and eat things as they are. And there is a sort of hunting movement as well, which is great. But I think the more people get to grips with touching their meats and their foods and pretending to be a cave person, I think so much of it's the way you're brought up. Like, my dad used to chase me around the house with fish heads when we were cooking, and I always used to be encouraged to put my hands inside of the chicken to marinate it. So I've always been comfortable with dead animals and as being part of the food system.
Yeah.
And cooking. And I think it's, people just need to go back to that. You know, yes, it's squeamish, but if you, you know, it's also real, and we need to embrace that. And it's healthy for our immunities as well, because we're exposing ourselves to a wider range of bacteria. So the myriad of benefits of being more ancestral in our approach, not just to eating, but also movement, is really the pathway to health.
Yeah.
I get really excited about the ancestral side of things.
That's great. Yeah, there's a couple things just before we go on that I kind of want to loop back on, because you said so much good stuff in there. In general, I think actually you would you'd get along with one of our past guests a lot, Daniel Cortez.
I met him in San Diego last year
at the Ancestral Health Symposium.
That's so
funny. Yeah, he's a he's an acquaintance of mine. He's a buddy of mine from out here. Mm-hmm. And anyways, you know, his whole thing is basically just that, kind of like you said, is like most states of disease are caused by the fact that we are human animals at the end of the day. And we try to divorce ourselves from the reality that we are animals. And most states, whether it's bad performance or states of disease, are caused by the fact that we've sort of divorced ourselves from nature, right? There's an evolutionary mismatch. That's what he calls it. That's the word I was looking for. So that's kind of interesting. And also to your point too, like a lot of people who are not hip to this stuff say, well, people live a lot longer now. And it's like, well, yeah, but look at the state that they're living in, right? And it's, to your point, people back, you know, some of our ancestors might have lived less time, but that's also because they had there was like bacterial killers and things like that killed them because of hygiene, and so many women died during childbirth and things like that. And that's the side that we're thankful to have allopathic medicine for, because it solves a lot of those things. However, so that skews the average life expectancy too back then, but at the same time, people weren't dying of what you would call Neolithic diseases, like type 2 diabetes, a lot of these cancers, things like that.
And so, heart disease as well.
Yeah, the degenerative kinds of disease. I think another thing that you said that I think is important is that if you are following circling back to the bigger picture of following a ketogenic diet long-term, if people are, they tend to kind of deprogram their system in the opposite direction. So if a lot of people have an inability to access their own body fat for fuel, and utilize that for energy, or to be able to utilize plate fat as efficiently for energy, there are a lot of people out there that in a keto space follow it maybe too strict for too long, and then they mess up the opposite side of their metabolism, where they're not as able to oxidize glucose for energy, right? And I think the other part of that balance that we need to look at in terms of finding something that's sustainable long term is if your body always has to mine for its own energy fat-wise, then, and it doesn't have enough readily available energy for stressful states, for certain types of training, so on and so forth, you're going to get a degradation of the thyroid hormone, as you put it. You're also going to find that anytime fat is liberated, it releases glucagon and cortisol or adrenal, like stress hormones. And that's why a lot of people who are like, do too strict keto too long, and maybe on top of that, also are in chronic states of caloric restriction, regardless of whether they're keto or not, they tend to be a little bit headier, as it's almost like they have more adrenaline hormones going on and are more subject to burnout in some ways. So what I tend to like doing with people is, depending on where they're coming at this from, is if they're going to use keto for a metabolic therapy, like in your husband's case, that's obviously its own thing. And then on top of that, a lot of people tend to do best doing some type of like almost like an on-ramp of a stricter version of low carb, high fat. And then they bridge into, all right, now when I'm doing, on days that I'm utilizing my fast twitch muscle fibers more, like let's say resistance training or sprinting or something like that, those are the days where I might have more carbohydrates. And then the days where I'm resting, walking the dog, jogging, not running, not doing as much on the fast twitch side, those are days that are safer to ramp up, more of the healthy fat, be a bit lower in carbohydrates. And that way you're almost like eating for your energy systems. Like when you're burning up carbohydrates primarily through fuel and those muscle fibers that are using carbohydrates or running, it's like you give the body the freeway fuel, and then you give the body the around town fuel for when it's using that,
That's exactly right, because it takes, although fat stores are great for like low intensity energy, like being in ketosis, it takes longer to oxidize fat cells for energy than it does to use glucose for energy. And that's why it's so great to use, to have extra carbs for sprinting or stressful situations, because you need that energy fast. Whereas fat ketones aren't delivered as quickly, it takes longer to oxidize them, which is why if you're trying to sprint and you're on a keto diet, you just can't. But if you need to, the endurance to keep going and going and going and going and you're bonking, ketones are great for that. Or if you're really clever and you're an athlete, because I've got quite a few athletes who are customers on my site, they can be endurance athletes, like cyclists, and they will use both glucose and ketones for their races and do really well on them. And they've experimented with loads of different ways of like when to add in exogenous ketones and when to have sugar, and they'll have both on race day. So they'll train in a ketotic state, and then on race day they'll have both sources of fuel, and they might have sugar and ketones, so that they have both the slow source of energy and the quick source of energy. So it's basically double fuel, dual powered.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I think too, I think like I, what I think is exciting about this is that it's like there's room for both, both seats at the table, so to speak. Is like the principle of keto that I think we can learn from it is that the bigger picture is that it is incredibly important to have a fat adapted metabolism to be able to burn, run off of fat for fuel, maybe most of the time in some people's cases, and then also not put the baby out with the bathwater and realize, wait a minute, we definitely need carbohydrates. And in some, for some people and some situations, for everybody, like in higher quantities, and in that framework as well, we also need to realize that there's a incredibly therapeutic benefit to having ketones in the system. And maybe instead of always having to mine for them and be in those stressful states that create really, 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 really deep states of ketones, we can supplement with them exogenously in order to capitalize on some of those benefits, like neurological health, anxiety relief, brain function, energy, athletic performance. One last thing on that is that, some of these athletes now are really sort of walking examples of this. I know a guy who is rehabbing, John Wall. He's in the NBA, and he was following more something akin to like a stricter ketogenic diet when his activity was lower, even though he's a incredibly, like fast twitch athlete. Basketball, I would say, is it's like really slow twitch in some ways, and then on the op, it's like they have a lot of these slow twitch muscle fibers, and then a lot of the best athletes have the like type 2B muscle fibers, which are fed with carbs. So then when he was ramping up his activity level again, he started to eat more and more carbohydrates tied to those time periods, right? And The other thing too is when he did increase those carbs, they weren't coming from, as you put it, like wheat and barley and things like that, or candy bars. Like they were coming from fruit. They were coming from like safe starches, like rice, potato, sweet potato, you know, gluten-free granolas, thing, you know, in acai, things like that. So anyways, I think there's ways for us to look at all this like a toolkit and use it when we need it, whether you're an athlete or if you're pregnant or on your menstrual cycle and you need to raise carbohydrates and certain nutrients during that time too.
Yeah, there'll always be a different diet for you as an individual, depending on what phase of your life you're in and how active you are and what you're doing with yourself. But yeah, as you said, with the carbs, it's important, you know, it's not just the calories or whether they turn into carbs or even the fat. It's what is it coming from? And it should be real food. And, you know, being ketogenic or low carb is great, but the food should be real. So real healthy fats, real grown plants, and if possible, free range animals, because obviously a lot of the toxins and hormones are stored in the fat. So if you're eating animals and you're on a high fat diet, you've got to be very aware of the kind of what's in that fat, because you'll be eating that those toxins. So yeah, you've got to be extra careful and really think about the food that you eat. But if the food is also grown as naturally as possible, that's always, you know you're doing well there. Even if it's a bit more expensive, I say just eat a little bit less of the good stuff, because we tend to, I mean, globally, we eat more than we need to. And incorporate some intermittent fasting as well. I've just started fasting every Tuesday. So that's one of my aims for this year, is to keep that up with a couple of other girls who are doing it as well.
That's awesome.
It means I felt amazing today, being Wednesday. I always feel so good after fasting the next day, like so much more energy.
Yeah, I think that's important too. I think fasting gets a bad rap for some people, kind of more in the Ray Pete community, who are more mindful of the thyroid and having a readily available energy source in the form of carbs, is that fasting is still a tool. And it's like, for some people, especially women, I find, and people who have like either more hormonal nuances and maybe there's more stressful states for some people, right? Like the busy type A professional, a lot of those people tend to maybe overdo fasting. But if you use it more on occasion for some of those folks, I think it can be more benefit, you know, you can get a lot of benefits from it and not get some of those other potentially deleterious effects with a thyroid. And obviously if you're someone who's healthy, mindful, it also, you know, it tends to be men tend to fall in this bucket too, but since there's less going on hormonally, you can tend to get away with a little bit more wiggle room with regards to fasting there.
Yeah, I think men can be a bit stricter and do a bit better generally, but I think it's all about, like you said, just not being too extreme. And that is any diet you're on, whether it's vegan, keto, carnivore. If it's extreme, then you're going to be missing out on nutrients that you probably need. And if you're doing too much fasting, well, it's, you know, that's, you are starving yourself. So it's like small, we just need hormesis, like small doses. To make us stronger, not just like starve yourself to death or to stress or to thyroid issues and burnout. And it's finding out what works for you. I mean, I think intermittent fasting is really brilliant for everyone. Just at least, you know, having 12 to 14 to 16 hours of not eating. It doesn't matter then, almost. I think you can mitigate, even if you're on a high carb diet, you can mitigate a lot of the inflammation caused by sugar from fasting for a period, and then potentially benefit from ketosis as well. So it's not always about what you're eating, but if you spend a long time not eating, then you could technically almost, you know, be keto, but not on a keto diet and still benefit. So it's just working out what works for you. And I think that's what people need to do, really, is just try different things, eliminate things so you can see the difference between the differentiating factors, and then keep what works, but also be mindful that what works will change over time as you get older.
Yes.
And as your hormones change.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think Dr. Mike T. Nelson and then Martin Berkon, who's in, you know, one of the original fasting, intermittent fasting sort of high priests, if you will, as he calls himself, They talk about how because keto was invented as a fasting mimicking diet, what they tend to do is they believe you can get away with things like and do better with things like maybe higher protein than keto traditionally recommends, and being able to be a bit more flexible with your carbs if you're also including some type of regular fasting. And like you just said, I think the less stressed you are, the more frequently you can get away with the hormetic stress, which is still a stress of fasting. And the more stressed you are, the more like the better it is to kind of maybe be careful with that and do it like on occasion, whether it's once a week or twice a week or, you know, a couple times a month. And in some people's case too, especially like some of those athletes and whatnot. You said a couple other like little hidden gems when you were talking earlier too. And I think that it's important for people to keep those as takeaways. One of which is part of why there's kind of a wheat and gluten sensitivity epidemic now is partially because we just haven't really evolved to have that. Like wheat and gluten, it's not something that people were meant to have, I think, regularly and in excess. I've been talking to a lot of chefs and you know, they'll tell you there's a lot more gluten, which is a protein, like a texturing agent, in breads and wheat products than there used to be. So they're also saying that like the wheat content, at least over here in America, is so much more infused with gluten that a lot of people here tend to go over to, let's say, Italy, where it's a little bit more artisanal, and they can get away with having a little bit more there without having as many. There's still inflammation going on, but it's lower level, right? Whereas over here, if I have some of our wheat products, it puts me in a pretty strange, almost like hyper aroused, like drug state, if you will.
And it is. I mean, gluten is supposed to be addictive, isn't it? So I know that what they put into, say, sliced bread, for example, I know we've got Hovis here. I don't know what the equivalent is in the States, but it's that sliced packaged bread has almost no resemblance to what the breads that would have been made 100 years ago, even or 200 years ago, because those breads would have been made from grains and wheat that were much more rustic and less processed and genetically modified. Because what, yes, you get now that looks like, so it's not that bread is evil or that wheat is evil. It's the way it's processed and manufactured now that makes it dangerous for us to consume, because it does not resemble what it is in its natural form. It's the same with a lot of fruits. They're genetically modified to be sweeter and lose the vitamins. There's less vitamins, there's less fibers, and there's more sweet flavor and more symmetrical shape, which is what people are looking for, to please the eye, but it does not please the belly or the body, because it doesn't look anything like what it looked like 100 years ago. The same with, right, carrots and all these vegetables. People want things to look perfect and beautiful. And they are actually synthetic foods that don't look like the foods they were 100 years ago. And so bread is not evil in itself at all. It's what humans have done to, right, the grains and the processing, and even the way it's grown with monoculture and the destruction that has on the habitat. But that's a whole other topic.
Right, right.
It's just like bread is not bad in itself. It's what we've done to it over the past 100 years, yeah, and the quantities in which we consume it. But the reason why we consume so much of it is because they put so much concentrated gluten in, it makes it extra addictive. And therefore, is it the fault of the human or the companies who make them? It's, you know, it's a really weird cycle. It's because food's made now to be addictive.
Right.
And it's not like what it was before at all. So it's quite a conundrum,
yeah,
in terms of ethics and health, yeah, and who's at fault. Is it, you know, is a person greedy or are they being drugged?
Like biopolitics, basically, from government subsidies, like them funding farmers and trying to persuade them to make cheaper crops and giving them money for that instead of giving them money for making organic foods, things like that, all the way to the table. You know,
mm-hmm,
I think you're right too. It's not just the wheat and gluten itself. It's like they put pesticides like glyphosates in there and things like that. And those are, you know, I always tell people like, yeah, okay, 1 in 100 people are truly a celiac. However, everyone is BS intolerant. You know what I mean? Like no one's meant to have that stuff.
No, because they're pesticides and toxins they're designed to kill. We get that inside of us. It's not going anywhere.
Right.
And And then it's just the destruction on us and ourselves and everything else that was meant to be growing on that land as well. So it's just reducing the biodiversity of the land that something's growing on. So yeah, that's just such a huge other debate though. I mean, I really do believe in ethical farming, going back to the way it was done on a smaller scale where possible. I know that that makes it more expensive, but for our health, it's a lot less expensive. So you've got to sort of decide, you know, some people say, oh, being healthy is really expensive. It might be more time consuming. That's true. It can be a little bit more expensive, but it's a hell of a lot cheaper than getting sick. So you kind of decide, really. Right. It's like, are you going to spend a bit extra money and time now, or are you going to delay that and have a more unhealthy life and then have less choices and less options in future?
Yeah.
You've got to really think about what you want to invest in.
Yeah, less freedom in some ways too. I think health, having a baseline level of fitness, functionality, and health is really freedom. You get more time to yourself, you know, you accomplish tasks quicker, you're more emotionally balanced and can make decisions more from a place of a biological neutral, right? Yeah, I think also a couple other things you said that was like hidden gold was with regards to the animals too, is like, I think, you know, we really should be animal based on a scientific level. And at the same time, I'll give, you know, I agree with vegans in the sense that there is a lot of animal mistreatment in the food industry. That doesn't mean that animals themselves shouldn't be eaten. It's that, you know, sustainability and raising our food, whether it's plants or animals, the right way with keeping it organic, natural, you know, grass-fed, wild-caught, free-range, keeping it as closely aligned with nature as possible is really key there. And then the other thing I think that you said that was shouldn't be glossed over that's important is a lot of women who I think tend to struggle with hormonal imbalances and maybe body composition and things like that don't necessarily take their cycle into account with that. And the most biologically expensive thing we can do is, or women can do, is have a baby, right? Yeah, I'm not going to be having a baby myself. For women, you know, so that the body needs different nutrients. It can't be in a survival state during that time. That's why you see a lot of girls who unfortunately have eating disorders and whatnot lose natural functioning and hormonal cycles and normal regulations of their body as they kind of put it in such a survival state, you know, they lose
exactly,
their period.
Yeah, and even lose their hair as well. I've heard that from doing strict keto too. And the reason is, I mean, as you said, the whole point of keto and why it works is because it mimics a fasted state. Why does it do that? Because, I mean, so that you can hunt, if you're fasting, we need to be able to go into ketosis because you've run out of food, ideally ancestrally, you would have run out of food and you've got to hunt. So therefore your sense of smell and sight needs to be sharper and you need that extra energy. So being in ketosis is amazing short term, but if you elongate the period in which you're ketosis, your body just thinks you're in starvation mode, you're in a famine. And if you're female, it's going to say, well, this is a really bad time to get pregnant and have a baby because there's a food shortage. So your periods will stop and all the other stresses will come in. So that's why I always say, don't do anything strict long term. You know, any diet should not be dogmatic. It should be flexible around what you need at certain times. And you've got to be flexible and listen to your body, but you can't listen to your body. Well, you can't hear it until you clear the crap out first. So initially start with eliminating everything additional. And then you can, as you add the foods back into your diet, you can notice how you respond, which you can't do if you're continuously inflamed because you eat gluten every day. You can't differentiate between any of the different factors. So it is a case of remove things and then add them back in and see how you do. And that's the only way you can work out what's right for you. But yeah, you don't want to mimic a fasted state for too long because then you get all the stress issues and the adrenal issues and the excess cortisol. that comes with that, because I originally made the mistake of being strict keto for the first year when I started, and that was not good. I actually started to put on a lot of weight all of a sudden. And I was just like, okay, and I was also doing CrossFit at 6 a.m. Oh, wow. every day, 5 days a week. So I think that was jacking my cortisol levels as well. And then I just toned it down a bit. I went low carbs, so I do 50 grams of carbs a day, 30 to 50 a day, and intermittent fasting. And I'm still in ketosis a lot of the time, but not all of the time. And that's like the perfect balance for me. And I don't do CrossFit at 6 a.m. anymore. Stop doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm especially fasted and whatnot. Yeah. It's sort of like your body's like a checkbook at the end of the day, and you need to have the right amount of green and red, you know, the red, even good hormetic stresses are red, like training, fasting, you know, things that can be very helpful. Like, it's just, you know, you need to have enough green in there through sleep, you know, nutrition, so on and so forth. I think, you know, I want to be respectful of your time here because you've been so generous. I think some big takeaways for people here are eat real food, right? Like align not only the food you eat, but yourself with nature. Remember, you are a human animal. Kind of do the minimum effective dose in each area, whether it's food, sleep, training, light exposure, detoxing from these alien technologies, if you will, these foreign technologies, so on and so forth. I think taking principles from keto, like following it strictly, or you know, some diet on the keto space, maybe more keto spectrum, more strictly for a period of time, and then bridge into other things where you are more flexible. Train your metabolism to be more flexible, and you'll have a lot better of a time being healthy, burning fat, performing, so on and so forth. And then the other one would be, you know, another way to capitalize on the benefits of exogenous ketones is to spend some time where your body is producing them endogenously, and then also supplement with them exogenously, so you can capitalize on many of those benefits too. You know, for the audience at home, are there any things that takeaways from today's conversation that you would want to throw out there just to help them get started?
To get started on keto, if they were doing that.
Well, whether it's about like keto concepts or just getting healthier, right? Performing better, things like that.
Yeah. Again, I would just go back to basics. I think, minimalism is the way forward. So the more you can eliminate that is fake or synthetic or not resembling its natural original state, the better you can do. And that is how you live your life, from spending time outdoors, getting real sunlight, and the foods you eat. And again, I think I didn't really stress the importance of sleep, but getting good sleep is probably the most important thing to help. Because without good sleep, you can't make good decisions. So I'd say, you know, think about how your ancestors lived and try and live like them in a civilized way, and you'll be on the pathway to health.
Right. Totally. That's great. Well, hey, I'd love to have you on again in the future, so maybe we can do that. And in the meantime, if people want to learn more about you, people also in the UK want to learn more about your work in the nutritional supplement and ergogenic space, where can they find you?
I mean, the best place is at Keto Supplements on Instagram, and or Sarah Aguilar on YouTube, in which we'll be showing all the interviews and videos that I've done across Keto Supplements and other businesses in the past. So it kind of brings everything together.
Awesome. That sounds great. Sarah, I appreciate you having you on, and I look forward to more conversations with you.
Thank you. Thanks. It's been great speaking to you. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Hey, everybody at home. That was right up there with Tim Noakes as one of my favorite episodes to record. So much hidden gems in there. I know I could listen to it again and pull some more out. So thank you for inviting us into your home, guys. Thank you for following along. And for those of you who have any questions, feel free to reach out and email Cody@realketones.com. Thank you.